Will you join me for a moment of prayer? Loving God, unifying God, please bless the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts that they may be acceptable to you. Amen. So, I feel like we're kind of putting the cart before the horse these past 2 weeks, because last week Moses was talking to the burning bush and confronting Pharaoh, and this week he's suddenly being born and being placed in the basket. You know, one of the most frustrating, aggravating parts of the story of Exodus is that we don't know when it took place. The details aren't given. It's something that has perplexed scholars, vexed them for hundreds and hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, because we have records for the Egyptian pharaohs going back thousands of years. And we know where they kept their capital cities and in which years, and every single pharaoh. So if in the story of Exodus they had just mentioned the name of the pharaoh, we could tie it down. We could pin it, you know? We could pin it to the year. If they had just mentioned which city, we could pin it to a year, and we would know exactly where and when this story took place and what happened with the flight out of Egypt. But the story is vague on those details, and so we can't place it. Scholars can't say where or when it happened. And because of this, because this story could have happened anywhere, just like with the story of Moses, how it's a story about human nature, this story happens everywhere. This is not the only time, the first or the only time, that a group of people suddenly became divided into factions, bigotry spread, power imbalance grew, and then a war happened. Is it? We can't pin this down anywhere because it happens everywhere. Do you see that? Yeah. Yeah, and we get to see how the different people involved in this story react to this situation. We see the midwives, right, using the Pharaoh's own bigotry against him to sort of work the system a little bit. Do you remember the excuse that they gave when they refused to kill the little boys and he couldn't figure out why what he had told them wasn't working? Do you remember what they said? Oh, you know those Hebrew women. They're so earthy, right? They're so primal. They're not all delicate like the Egyptians. They give birth so fast we can't get there in time, and we had no choice. The babies had to live. And he goes, oh, well, yeah, you know, that makes sense. He was a bigot. He believed in that stereotype. It's a common stereotype. It happens not just in this story. It happens a lot of places. And we see Pharaoh's daughter bucking convention and doing something that, you know, maybe she was one of those kids that didn't like being told to do what to do by her dad, and so she decided this is one little way she can rebel. I know what I'll do, right? I'll date a guy from the other side of the tracks. I'll adopt this kid that my dad would never approve of, but she does that. We see all the different ways these things play out. It's the same story we've heard again and again and again across cultures. And we see the Pharaoh, the person in power, right, behaving exactly like people who have an enormous amount of power and very little accountability behave, because they have so much to lose. They get a little paranoid. They're always feeling just a little bit threatened. And so we watch as the standard progression happens, as we go from people that start to be polarized to people that there starts to be some dehumanization, a little bit. We're not just different anymore, we're a little bit less than. You know, there's a little bit more and a little bit less, all the way to demonization, which happens later in the story when he starts calling them lazy, deceitful slaves. That's demonization, not just less than, but right and wrong, good and evil. So we go from different to more than, less than, to good and evil. That's the standard progression that we see in situations like this, isn't it? And what's really interesting is you can see it happen right in the middle of the story. You may not have noticed, but what Pharaoh uses to refer to the Israelite people changes halfway through the story. It progresses. Do you know what he calls them at the beginning? Who remembers? What does he call them when he worries that they're growing too big? The Israelite people. It's their name and their people. Do you hear that? The Israelite people. And then later when he instructs the midwives, what does he call them? Did you notice the difference? What does he call them? Who remembers? Hebrews. He calls them Hebrews. And what's interesting about that word is that we think of them as interchangeable, Israelites, Hebrews. Same people, right? Same word. Doesn't matter. It's interchangeable terms. But a growing number of scholars are starting to think that the word Hebrews comes from an even older word, Habiru, which means refugee. It means refugee. And it's not a pleasant term. It was a slur. It was a derogatory word. And in fact, whenever we see that word in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Genesis, it's generally being used by someone in power and not in a pleasant way. And so you see them go from polarization to dehumanization in a single paragraph, from the Israelite people to a nameless refugee group. Boom, that fast. And what's interesting about these stories is that we see them again and again and again throughout history, but we also see it in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis especially, because this is where they're laying out how all of the people came to be. And what's really interesting about it is that it speaks to this human nature where we define ourselves by who we are not, and we generally have the bigotry with the people that we are closest to. The people that we are closest to. I used to host French exchange students when I was in high school, and listening to them make jokes was really interesting because they would make jokes like we make jokes, right? This person, that person, and that person walk into a bar, and then there's a punchline. They would make the same jokes, but the people from northern France made jokes about the Belgians because those are the ones that bordered them. The people from southern France made jokes, all their jokes were about Germans, which is weird because they don't share a border on the south with Germany, but the German tourists come to their beaches and that's who they see all the time. You see that? Same country, different targets for their jokes. You knew exactly, but it was the people who were closest. They weren't making jokes about people in China. They weren't making jokes about people in Mexico. They're making jokes about the people that were right next door. That were right next door. And what's really great about the Old Testament is that it shows this to us again and again in the stories about warring factions. You see the Ishmaelites versus the Israelites. You see the Israelites versus the Edomites. You see the Israelites versus the Egyptians. And yet when you look back at the origins of these peoples, you see that they were always brothers. The Ishmaelites and the Israelites go back to Isaac and Ishmael, who were brothers. Remember that? Right? You got the Edomites versus the Israelites. These guys were scrapping it up and tangling and tussling over borders through thousands of years. And they all go back to Jacob and Esau. Twins. Twins in the womb. You see how close they were? And then we have the Egyptians, right? We have this tussle with the Egyptians. And what's really interesting is that in all of this, they forget. The Pharaoh forgets that Joseph married an Egyptian woman. So all those descendants years later living within their borders are part Egyptian. You see that? They were related. And yet they still are trying to define themselves as being different. And what's interesting about this story is that we know from the beginning that it's a story of fresh starts and new beginnings. You know how we know? Because when Moses' mother places him in the basket, wraps him up, makes this terrible choice to try and save her child and puts him in the basket, the word for the basket is the same word that's used for Noah's Ark. It's the same word. The idea that you would be saved from all these rushing waters and be pulled out alive and start fresh. And that's exactly what happens. And unless you read it in the Hebrew, you wouldn't know that. But it's a direct tie back to Noah's Ark, this fresh start, this small group of people that are going to be okay. They're going to be okay. And when we think about things that are going on in our world now, and we look at all the things that the people in this story did, how they subverted, how they stood up to, how they made better choices for, we have tools for how we operate in our society. But stopping the progression from the polarization to the dehumanization to the demonization, which can happen so rapidly, so quickly, we don't even think about it. We have to find those connections again. We have to recognize that if in the Bible, again and again and again, the warring factions go back to being connected as brothers, then every time we find ourselves in a situation where we are warring factions, if we look back far enough, we find our connection. And we are not so different. Do you see that? And the tough part is taking the time to look. It's taking the time to breathe. Is taking the time to stop that progression and think. So I'm going to try a little experiment with you. Some of you might find this a little uncomfortable. I'm hoping not, but I'm going to ask you to be good sports. You may notice that people are throwing around the term World War III. Has anybody heard that? That there are tensions between us and Russia right now, and people are throwing around the term World War III. So I'm just going to ask a question. Is anybody in this congregation right now, if someone were to ask you, would you self-identify as being Russian? Go ahead and raise your hand. Okay. So I studied some Russian. I have a degree in Russian, but I'm not Russian by any means. I'm part French and part hillbilly. We don't talk about that side of the family. They make great moonshine, though. So nobody here self-identifies as Russian. Okay, how many people, if you are asked, would self-identify as American? Go ahead and raise your hand. Self-identify as American. Yeah, okay, so the majority of the congregation would say they're self-identifying as American. How many people here would self-identify as white or Caucasian? Okay, the bulk of the congregation. Okay, how many people are aware that the word Caucasian is used because people who have this particular color to their skin originate from the Caucasus, which is a mountain range that spans the border between Georgia and Russia. If we go back far enough, the majority of this congregation, even though we don't identify as Russian, share ancestry with the Russians. Perhaps if we go back far enough, we all have great-grandfathers, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers that were brothers. Maybe they were even twins in the womb, tussling back then. But we were brothers. Can I get an amen to that? Amen.